This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Jeff Ball, and I am just really looking forward to just digging in and looking under the hood of your soundtrack for Time Spinner and talking about your work as a violinist, too. So it's really great to have a chance to talk with you.
Great. Thank you for having me as well. I really appreciate it. This is a lot of fun.
It's such an amazing game, Time Spinner, and it just kind of, I guess, reminds me that this is like the best time, like the most perfect time to create a kind of a retro style Metroidvania game, because you're freed from the constraints of, you know, space, and you don't have to be economical with the music, and the artwork is gorgeous. And so it must have been such a fun project to work on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, it was sort of like, how can I make the most nostalgia, you know, from within myself, because I had played so many of these games when I was a kid, you know, and it's just great to be able to dig into a lot of the old sounds and try to create music from stuff that I recognize, you know, just even sound wise.
Yeah. And what's so interesting, I've never seen anybody do this on a soundtrack before, but you actually put some of your sketches, like your beta research, into how you created the soundtrack for the game. That's so cool. It's like a math problem to solve for X, and so you and show your work.
Yeah. Well, the thing to know about this game too is that it was, you know, kickstarted back in like 2014 or 2013, I think. And there's been a lot of people that have been on the journey, and I know that Bodhi Lee, the creator of the game, has been, you know, live streaming on Twitch once a week the development of the game. So a lot of people have heard this early music, and a lot of them wanted that music on the soundtrack too, so they could listen to it again, because it wasn't included in the finalized game.
Did that pose any problems having, well, not really temp music in the game, but changing the soundtrack as the project progressed from year to year?
I think it's actually good to do that. You need to have a rapport with your developer, of course. For me, it was just one guy, Bodhi Lee, and he, you know, made 90% of the game, and I did the music, and Power Up Audio did the sound effects. So, and I'd been on the project since the very beginning. Well, since the Kickstarter, I think Bodhi had been working on it since like college or high school even. And from the Kickstarter, it was kind of like we had this version of the art, the version of the story that we were working with. And so we wrote music. I wrote music to fit within that. And as time progressed and the story evolved and the art evolved, it sort of didn't really fit anymore. And it was really good to sort of recreate something that fit better. And also in the process it developed a connection between me and the developer. So I think it's actually really important to have a sketch process along the way, and it really connects the composer and the developer.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing that's so interesting about it is that there are a lot of composers who only get brought in to do the music when the game is what, like maybe 70 or 90% done, and so they don't get to go on that journey, and they don't get the experimentation that the rest of the development team has had. So that must have been super helpful.
This was a very, very long development cycle, and I was involved pretty heavily on other aspects too, because when you have a small team like this, you tend to divide up other duties as well. So I actually helped build the Kickstarter trailer as well as the launch trailer for the game. I basically built that whole trailer myself.
Wow.
Yeah. But also, we went to PAX Prime in 2015, and we had a little booth there, and Bodhi wasn't feeling very comfortable doing it by himself, so we got together, and I helped him run the booth, because it was, you know, 8 hours for 4 days straight just standing up and talking to people.
Yeah, and, it's intense.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun, though. We had a lot of fun, and it helped me connect with him even more and to do the music on this, because for me, it's like, I want to create the best product I can for the developer. And if I have a lot of time to do it, then I'm going to spend all of my time doing it.
Yeah. Well, what's so interesting is listening to the original Kickstarter trailer and then listening to what eventually became the finished soundtrack. There's a big difference there because you were able to develop more sounds and just really nail all these iconic styles of those amazing, you know, Metroidvania games.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did tons and tons of research. I played Castlevania Order of Ecclesia, which is the primary influence for the game. And I also played through Symphony of the Night. You know, I've got about 3 years at this point to just try things and play around with these games and get the sounds in my head. And of course there was other influences like Chrono Trigger and, you know, the Chrono series in general and other Final Fantasy games. And I've already played all of those way too much. So it was like my opportunity to really dig into Metroidvanias because I really hadn't before, but yeah, it was great to, you know, play through these games. And from that, I actually dug deeper into the composers, Michiru Yamane. I did a lot of research on what software and what hardware she had access to. And a lot of those sounds are still available. You can, you know, buy Roland Sound Bank synthesizers and, you know, use all of these classic sounds from the late 90s in these games. And so I got a Roland Integra 7, and it has just tons and tons of old sounds, and you just, you know, thumb through them. I think there's like 6,000 presets in it. So it took a while to dig through it all, but there's so many classic, iconic sounds in this thing that just sound like it's straight out of a video game. You know, it could be Metroidvania, it could be something like a Kirby game, it could be anything, you know?
Thank you.
That's incredible. Yeah, what an archive. Because I was going to ask you if you were able to use either vintage synthesizers or, you know, reproduction things. And I think that gives it such an authentic quality. That's just really cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of the biggest things I think that gave it the most authentic feel was actually the reverb. I researched the PlayStation 1 in the hardware of it. They have a reverb chip that has a very specific algorithm that I can't remember the name of right now, but there's a plugin. Once I found out what that algorithm was, I was able to search online to be like, is there any VSTs that have this reverb algorithm in it? And I found one that was free. So I downloaded it and I put it on my music and I tried it out. And with a little bit of tweaking, it sounded like it came straight out of a PlayStation. So I was like, this is really cool.
Yeah. I was going to ask you what some of the like really iconic things, once you had like really deconstructed music from that era, besides that, what were some of the other things that like really suddenly put you in that period with that music?
Oh, yeah. Well, I know on Symphony of the Night, there is some live electric guitar that's used a lot. And so I had my friend Kane German, he came in and he played a bunch of guitar parts, acoustic and electric. And I also had live bass with my friend Christian Picot, who incidentally used to be audio director at Ubisoft and worked on a bunch of the Assassin's Creed games. And of course, Kristen Nygaard, I think you've had her on your show before.
Oh, yeah. She's amazing. I mean, there's nothing she can't play. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She played ocarina and recorder and flute. But I had to have ocarina because it's the ocarina of Time Spinner.
Oh. I see what you did there.
I couldn't help myself.
What I really love about listening to the Time Spinner soundtrack is it sounds like you had a lot of latitude for musical styles, which is so cool. Ancient Forest is amazing because it sounds a little bit like a Balinese gamelan with the kind of shifting in and out of phase and stuff. So it must have been fun to be able to just, I don't know, just have all that freedom to use all these different styles.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one thing that's a hallmark of the Symphony of the Night soundtrack is that each track is kind of a very different style. I mean, using the samples that they had and the sounds, just bringing all these styles together, it actually works. And so I really wanted to see if I could do that with this soundtrack, too. With the Ancient Forest track, I was listening to a lot of Yasunori Mitsuda tracks from like Chrono Cross and stuff like that. And he has this, I discovered, really deep love and connection with minimalist music, like Steve Reich. And I was like, well, why don't I take that influence and just sort of do it in my own little style? That's kind of how I approached the entire soundtrack. It was like, I can tell where you're going with this. Like, oh, you've got this strings and harpsichord thing in the library in Symphony of the Night, but I need it to be a little bit more intense. So instead of making it like Bach, like Yamane did, I'm going to make it like Beethoven. So that's what I did.
That is so, so cool. And a thing that I noticed with, well, just about every track is that it has a really strong melody. And it's not just any old melody either. It's something that you can turn around and modify and, you know, change keys. And so how hard was it to kind of hit on these initial themes? Or do you have just a sort of natural ability to have melodies pop in your head?
I don't know. I think for me, it did take probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 sketches before I would find something that really felt like it fit. And melody-wise, I think for me, my issue that I always have when I write music is that I want everything to be super complicated all the time, because I get very easily bored when I'm writing music. If I'm just writing like quarter notes, it's like, why don't I just add a bunch more notes in between and make it fun? But then, you know, as you listen to that over a long period of time, it doesn't really lend itself to singability, you know?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I tried to do with the soundtrack especially is make the melodies as singable as I could and as simplified. I mean, they're still a little complicated, but that was sort of my secret little quest with this game. Because I know that I've written so much music in the past, and a lot of it has been me trying to figure out how to make these short loops feel like they last a long time. You know, because I've worked on mobile games and stuff like that, and they only give you, like, sometimes they only give you 30 seconds to make something that's going to be listened to by people for a very long time. And so you got to figure out a way to make that interesting and not, you know, get really tiring after a while. But the thing about it is, if you want to have memorable melodies, you got to kind of throw that away. And so it was kind of this deprogramming process and trying something new that, you know, lent itself to me trying to, you know, make something that felt a little bit more obvious and memorable.
Thank you. Well, one of the melodies that got stuck in my head like right off the bat was Avian Capitalism, because it's so beautiful. It's like being in Paris. It's just got a really neat, you know, almost accordion sound, and just the style of it. And again, you know, I could just listen to that music over and over, which people will do because that's the crow that sells you stuff in the store, and you know, you want to take your time and decide and stuff. So
yeah, that track itself actually just kind of, I was watching the live stream of Bodhi creating, you know, more about this character and drawing, I think maybe the portrait of it or something, I don't remember exactly, but it was very Merchant Crow focused. And I just kind of sat down while he was doing it, and I sketched all that out in maybe an hour. So, you know, that sort of just raw expression of what the character is without trying to let myself get in the way too much. That's just what came out. And it turned out that the Merchant Crow is French, I guess.
Because why not? You know, it's just a little flea market in Avignon or something. And
yeah, I feel like the Merchant Crow is definitely like the most, you know, disconnected from everything, yet still involved character in the game. So with that, it's like, it makes sense to have French music because nothing in the game is French.
yeah, that's right. There are so many different areas where Lunais goes, you know, maybe we should explain the plot a little bit. Lunais, she's been training her whole life to be a time messenger. And on the day that she finally is qualified to do that, her whole family is just killed. And so she has this ability, and she jumps through the time spinner to try to go back in time and stop that from happening and destroy the empire. And so that must have given you a lot of options with, you know, different styles and periods and locations too.
Oh yeah. I tried to definitely paint the past as a more acoustic vibe and have the present of the game, which is very futuristic, you know, with technology and a little bit dystopian, to have a more techno electric instrument vibe to it as well.
it's very cool. And there are moments where she visits a library and is studying up on the history to try to figure out how this all happened. And those cues are wonderful because they do have a really ancient quality. You really like went to town with the harpsichord on
that
one. Oh, yeah.
Well, it can't be a Metroidvania that is inspired from Castlevania without lots of harpsichord. Even in the library track, I tried to paint it a little bit more bleak and a little bit more electronic. So there's lots of electronic pads underneath the harpsichord in that track. And it's definitely got a weird sort of quirkiness to it. There's a lot of enemies in the game in the present area, in the present time period, that are inspired by enemies from the past, but in a sort of twisted, robotic, mechanized way. So I guess I just tried to do that with the music as well.
Yeah, and it's really effective. And the other thing that it must have been a challenge is that because, you know, like all of these kinds of games, when you get a new ability, you can retrace your steps and get to an area that was locked before. And, you know, that means there's a lot of music that has to cover all of that. So how did you make the most of the music that you wrote?
When I was looking at the Symphony of the Night soundtrack and the Order of Ecclesia soundtrack, it turns out that a lot of these tracks that they write in these games are pretty long. Like I did the music for a game called Tiny Barbarian DX, which is a very 8-bit, fun, happy little platformer. The music for that game was only about a minute and a half long to 2 minutes at longest. But with Time Spinner, a lot of the tracks were a bit longer than that to fit the size of the areas that they were in and how much time that I knew the player might spend in them. And it's sort of like everything was tailored to how much time the player might be participating in this place and time and the event. If there's a battle track, typically, I would play through the game. I would have a lot of, you know, builds sent to me from the developer every time he would do something new. And so I would play through the game and play through the battles and just kind of mark down how much time everything took me. And also, I looked at the map. It was really handy to actually have a map that was broken down into blocks so I could actually count the number of blocks in each area and sort of gauge the length of music that would be appropriate for something like that.
We'll be right back.
incredible. It must have been a different experience to play like a boss battle with no music at all.
Yeah. Well, I think Bodhi always put in something temp wise, because he always, when you're, you know, making the game, it's good to have the audio markers and cues and stuff built into the game. So all you have to do when you get the new music is just kind of throw the audio file in and it's already implemented.
Did you have any input on how the music would be implemented in the game?
I did a little bit, yeah. I wanted to have seamless looping. The seamless looping to me was really important because we were using the XNA engine. It's an older engine. It's not something that has a whole lot of audio capabilities, but I spent a lot of time and did a lot of research, and because of my experience working on older soundtracks like Monkey Island 2 Special Edition, I did a lot of music with Wilbert Roget and Jesse Harlan, and I took that model from them where we actually had markers built into the wave files, and these wave files had loop points based on those markers. So it would start at the beginning and then it would arrive at a marker point. And then when you played through the track, it would keep going past the start of the track in the same file. And then it would loop back to a point where it could be a seamless loop without any overlapping. So I took that model from Monkey Island 2 Special Edition and put that into Time Spinner. And I was able to work with Bodhi on which sort of markers would work for all of the different consoles that we were going to be releasing the game on. And it's a really small thing in the grand scheme of things, but it sounds so much better. You don't notice any of these harsh starts at the beginning of tracks, and it worked out really well. So I'm really happy that we could do that.
Yeah, for sure. Because I've noticed, especially like if you're reading the dialogue and the music is going, it's not clubbing you over the head with, yep, here's that phrase again. I mean, it's really, really subtle. And so I was wondering how you did that, because it just, you could listen to it for hours, basically. And sometimes in a boss battle, I am there for hours, but that's another story.
Right. Yeah, the game can be sometimes unforgiving if you aren't prepared for some of these boss fights. But there's, you know, if you go back and explore and you find new things, you typically find a way to beat them. So
yeah. Well, besides the, you know, this nostalgic factor that, you know, these were games that you played when you were growing up, what couple things about them do you just really love?
For me, it's sort of like those games really pull you into them. You know, there's a very clear universe that's created, and it's very consistent. And something like that can be really hard to maintain when you've got such a big team working on these games. And especially with music, I know that on Chrono Trigger, it wasn't just Yatsunori Mitsuda, it was also Nobuo Uematsu who worked on the soundtrack. And for the longest time, I didn't even know that. And you couldn't even really tell because the music was so seamlessly connected. For me, like playing those games and, you know, just feeling the connection to the story and the vibe, like Chrono Trigger especially and Symphony of the Night, they all have such unique vibes that were different from pretty much anything else that was coming out at the time, musically and stylistically and story-wise, you know? So with all of that combined, it was like stuff like that, I think, really sticks with you because it doesn't ask you to just play the game. It also asks you to think about philosophical things. And I really like that concept and sort of how they can play with those concepts in the game. And we do that a little bit in Time Spinner too. And of course, that was just super fun to me to be able to be part of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I bet. Because clearly it's a style of game and an era of games that everybody on the team just really loved. And it really shows with the gorgeous art, and the writing is fantastic. And it's just, it's such a great game. And you're right. I mean, the story just absolutely just sucks you in. And the music is just such a huge part of it. So yeah, it's really great. And you know, it's one of the few games that I've read reviews for lately where the reviewer actually mentions the music. So clearly, you know, you've really like hit it out of the park with this, because a lot of times they don't even mention the music. So
yeah, I'm really, really grateful. For me, it's like you work on this sitting in your apartment for so many years, and then you get kind of numb to the goodness of it, I guess. And then it comes out and it's like, oh, everybody, they like it? Oh, cool.
It must be so hard to wait for a reaction like that, because, you know, secrecy is, and rightfully so, it's a big part of the game industry. Nobody ever talks about what they're working on. And so it must be, after all those years of working on it, yeah, to finally share it with people must have just been amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's always a huge relief to get positive feedback after you've worked on something that long. It's such a long process, and you never know what people are really going to think once everybody looks at it, you know? So it was a great, I'm really glad that everybody has received the soundtrack well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, with having that long to write it, were there stretches where there'd be maybe a gap when you hadn't heard from the studio for a while and then they'd need a thing? And I mean, was it ever a challenge to kind of go back and pick up where you left off?
It definitely was a little bit. I think that, you know, we did the Kickstarter at the beginning, and then I wasn't really needed super, you know, heavily at the, you know, midpoint in the development process. My stuff sort of came around once the script had been finalized and all of that dialogue had been implemented into the game. So moving from the point of the Kickstarter to the present where, you know, everything's done, it was a sort of like there were a lot of gaps. There were stretches where there was nothing happening. And during that period, I actually spent a lot of time doing, you know, the soundtrack for Tiny Barbarian DX. And I would have to sort of balance projects. And for me, I think it was more like you close one book and open another book that you're reading, and then you read through it some more, and then you close it and you open your other book again. You can kind of, you might have to retrace your steps a little bit, just like read a few pages that you've already read. But once you get back up to speed, it's like, okay, you understand, oh yeah, okay, I got this sort of format, these kind of instruments, these melodies, these inspirations, these, you know, harmonies and rhythms and drum beats and everything else that I can use. And once you have all that back in the hat, you could kind of mix it around and pull something else out of it.
Thank you. Is there one cue in particular that you're just like super proud of? Just like, yeah, nailed it.
Oh, yeah. I think it was the Pioneer's Horizon track.
Oh, I love that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And it has all of the musicians playing on it. So Kristen plays and she nailed all the melodic parts and the bass and guitar just, you know, fit so well with it. That one was, you know, sort of like my venturing into a point in the game where I hadn't fully realized what I wanted to do with it yet. And I had the inspirations from like some of the tracks from Order of Ecclesia, but they were a little too funky. Like I wanted something, and Bodhi, the developer, wanted something that was a little more serious, on the serious note. So I kind of had to figure out, how do I make this funky influence sound more down to earth and, you know, serious? So it kind of turned into a light prog rock, and that was something that I really liked, and the melodies and everything. It sort of almost has a Secret of Mana vibe to it as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. No, I really like that one. I was thinking it even sounds a little bit Latin, just ever so slightly.
Oh yeah.
And definitely having the live musicians on there just, well, clearly, you know, they give it a real presence. And so that's really amazing, too. And, you know, like Kristen, you do a lot of recording in your home studio for soundtracks by other people. I mean, like Jason Graves' soundtrack for Moss, which is, you're playing on that, is just spectacular.
Oh, really? Thank you.
Is it hard to balance composing and then keeping track of all your other projects too?
With the violin recording, it's actually more like things pop up last minute and then you've got a couple of days to sort of bang it out and send it off. And then after that, it's almost like I don't remember that I did it. So there would be plenty of times on Moss where Jason would just kind of pop into my email and be like, hey, here's this track. Can you play on it? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay. And I'd play it and send it back. And then I wouldn't even think about it. But, you know, he would get back to me with, you know, saying that he liked it. And then I was just like, cool, good, done. You know, back to writing, you know, because I got so much other stuff going on. I always made time and I always enjoy playing stuff for people. And, you know, even if I don't remember exactly everything that I've worked on, it's still, sometimes I'll go back into my files and just try to remember and look and see what I've actually done. And it's like, oh yeah, I did that. I totally forgot. Like I didn't for the longest time even realize that I had played a bunch of string parts on Super Lucky's Tale. Because they just sent me the music and they were like, hey, play this stuff. And then I played it and I sent it back to them and then I forgot. And it's not like they really, you know, they don't send me screenshots. They don't send me anything really, you know, revealing about it. They're just kind of like, yeah, here's some music and we can't give you an NDA, but just play it.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, sometimes you get something like that and then it turns out to be like Mass Effect 3 or, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that a goal when you moved to LA? Was that a thing that was kind of on your list of here's how I can, you know, keep my career going or get my career started?
It was definitely, I think, more like I moved here because I wanted to find better networking opportunities. And I knew that there were a lot of GDC composers who lived down here. And so that made it a pretty easy transition. The other reason why I moved here is actually because I have a lot of video production experience. And so I figured if music didn't work out, that it would be a good fallback to be in a place that has a lot of video production. So it was a smart decision to move here. And with the violin stuff, when I lived up in Washington State, I was playing in a lot of different symphonies and only doing a little bit of violin recording on the side. But since I've moved here, I've done a number of different sessions, like orchestral sessions with a group that will hire me sometimes to be part of the group. And it's been a lot of fun and I've learned a lot. I've been on some really, really incredible, you know, I've met some really incredible musicians. I've been on some really incredible projects and it's been fun to just be here and to experience all that.
Yeah, I bet. Because, I mean, the game music community especially is like a really tight-knit bunch. And I would imagine, yeah, the musicians in LA would be too. And so when you're recording tracks for composers like Jason, do you have anything special about the way you've set up your studio?
Yeah, with Jason, it was actually a sort of a unique thing. I typically use, like, I've got my two microphones here. You're actually listening to one right now. It's a Shure KSM-32, and I've got two of them. And I typically record in stereo with them split, you know, just sitting at my desk, really. And if you pan the, you know, microphones 100% each, they, left and right, they sound really, there's like a lot of space in the mix. For Jason actually sent me some of his own microphones in the mail. And, you know, I set them up the way he wanted me to. And because this was, you know, a more considerable, longer gig, every time I would record for him, I would plug in those microphones and use them and, you know, the way he wanted them and send him stuff in a certain way. And that made him happy. And so that was good. And yeah, it's sort of like it really depends on the project. Like I've done gigs where I've recorded orchestral backing where it's just samples and you layer yourself underneath of them. And I'll take my setup and I'll put the microphones a bit farther away to give it more of a, you know, rounded sound instead of the harsh crunch of the closeness with the instrument. And you can layer yourself a number of times and make it fit really well into a sample. So it works. I like doing that stuff too.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And it sounds like, you know, being flexible with your setup or, you know, willing to take chances and experiment is a big thing that'll help you be successful too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started doing this mostly because I went to GDC in 2009, 2010. And I told people that I was a violinist and they were like, oh, what's your rate? And I was like, what? Because I hadn't considered that I could record from home. I didn't have a setup. I didn't have anything. And I started doing that a little bit. And I did a bunch of stuff for Dan Reynolds. He was a guy that came to GDC a lot. And he currently, I think, works at Unreal. But he was sort of the person who brought me in first. And I played something for him and he really liked it. But then at GDC, they have this thing called the Demo Derby, where they demonstrate tracks, people listen to them, there's a panel where they judge them. And Dan brought that track that had me playing on it. And they played that in front of all of the, you know, composers that were present at the panel. And it was a full room. So all the panelists were like, wow, that violin sounds really good. And Dan was like, yeah, that's my friend Jeff. And he pointed at me and they're like, oh yeah, stand up. So I stood up and I was like, hey. So after that, people were like, wow, you can record really well. And that sort of started my journey into being this, you know, recording myself for media guy.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's like everybody's GDC hope is that they'll finish up the conference with lots of contacts and oh, lots yeah. of leads for work and stuff. That's fantastic. That's really
yeah,
great.
Yeah. And I mean, since then, it's been like I can't even count how many people from GDC that I've recorded violin for. It's just been a really great process and really great experience to, you know, working with these composers, you get a sense of their own composition process just by playing the string parts for them. And so that's really sort of added to my repertoire in terms of what I can do with my own process too.
Oh yeah, for sure. And the soundtrack for Time Spinner is on Bandcamp right now. Do you have any other plans for it? Like, is there going to be a vinyl release maybe? Or
I guess it depends on how successful it is. We'll have to see. It's on Bandcamp and it's on, you know, all the major streaming platforms as well. And of course, I've been working with Materia on that. Sebastian is a really great guy to work with if you're releasing a game soundtrack. And I think also he's been keen on releasing sheet music lately. So there may be some Time Spinner sheet music in the future, like oh, piano that would... stuff.
That yeah. would be amazing because those melodies, oh, they're just so great. So
oh, yeah. I'm kind of excited. Like, I'm not really making the arrangements myself. So I'm just kind of curious of what they're going to come up with.
yeah, for sure. Well, Jeff, how can people find you, like on social or on your website?
Yeah, my website is jeffballmusic.com, and I'm on Twitter as well. That's a great way to contact me. I'm pretty active on Twitter, and that's at JeffThatNoise.
Kind of an understatement, but yeah.
Right.
Wow. It's been so much fun to talk with you. And I can't wait to hear what you do next. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.